your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Our chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. We're going to have sort of an interesting program this evening. We're going to be talking a little bit about a senatorial committee headed up by the late Senator McCain and ex-Secretary of State John Kerry back in many years ago. I think the date would be 1992. And interviewed these two gentlemen, and one was the author of Enormous Crime, I also interviewed a number of years ago, okay? But in addition, the other man is Representative Lo Bolitier, okay? And he and Representative Hendon were representatives in U.S. Congress at one time together. And they tried to bring forth the abandonment and the corruption of the ignoring of our remaining POWs. They were abandoned by Congress and most of the presidential administration. And anyway, they tried for years to bring this forward. And anyway, there's a book out, An Enormous Crime, and you still need to go out there and read it, find out what's really going on in this country. But anyway, this first clip is Imus in the morning, and he's interviewing both Representatives Hendon and Lo Bolitier. They were both men in Congress that were trying to resolve the POW question. What actually happened was that, I'll make some comments after we play this clip, okay? But here you go right now, so listen carefully.
Please welcome now to the Imus in the Morning program, Bill Hendon, former congressman, and John LeBoutelier, also a former congressman. Mr. Hendon's here because he's written a book called An Enormous Crime. So John McCain's going to be on tomorrow. If you were talking to him, what would you ask him?
What would I ask him? I'm biased because we're here to talk about this topic, obviously. And Bill and I, we were very sad as Republican congressmen to discover our fellow Republicans not honest about the fact that a Republican president, Richard Nixon, left POWs behind in 1973 in the middle of the Watergate scandal. We come to Washington in 1981. We get into this. We know nothing about it. We get into it. And sadly, we discover not only that the prisoners are there still in Laos and in Vietnam, but every time we go to a higher up in the Reagan administration, who are obviously all Republicans, they're all bad news.
With one exception.
With
the president himself.
The president was great. But the foreign policy establishment that Billy and I dealt with as young, naive congressmen learning our way along turned out to be, frankly, a bunch of criminals. All right. And the names that we ran into over the course of the 80s, Wolfowitz, Armitage, Cheney, even Powell, they became our enemies over the issue of what they did to leave and cover up the existence of POWs. And that was 80s and 90s. And Billy can tell you all about the Senate committee that he was an investigator for after he was a congressman. And discovering more and more about it, the very group I just mentioned, Cheney and all those guys, they're the same people who 10 years later from 92 to 2002, same people cooked the intelligence to get us into Iraq. The same people did the same thing.
I mean, cooking intelligence, if I can say so, it's pretty heavy charge. But when you're looking at a satellite image in 1992, and there is a name in the prison yard, SEREX 72TA88 underneath it, and Mick Sarex is still missing. He was on.
We have that picture here.
Yeah, Bat 21. All right, the movie, you remember?
Sure.
He was never mentioned in the movie, but his name shows up 20 years after the shoot down in the prison yard, and there's another guy's E&E code and his four-digit authenticator. There are 19 four-digit authenticators over in Laos. My goodness, WRYE in a satellite image along a trail in Laos. What could that possibly mean? Only one thing, Major Blair Rye, WRYE. MIA. And when you're looking at this stuff and people are saying there's nothing to it, we get a little angry and it costs you some relationships in Washington.
We're talking with Bill Hendon and John LeBoutelier about Bill's book, An Enormous Crime, the definitive account of American POWs abandoned in Southeast Asia. How many were abandoned?
600. And here's the deal. Here's what happened.
Why were they abandoned? I mean, why would...
I'll tell you exactly. You remember the Paris Peace Agreement,
yes,
January 73. 4 days after that agreement, Nixon sends a letter, secret letter, we handed you a copy, to the Prime Minister Pham Van Dong of North Vietnam. And the letter said, we will pay you, the North Vietnamese, $4.75 billion. And in return, you're going to give us all the prisoners back.
Sure.
And quit fighting.
And we'll stop fighting. And the money's to heal the wounds of war. That's what the letter said. $4.75 billion. To this day, 35 years later, we've never paid a penny. What the Vietnamese did, upon receipt of that letter, they gave us half the 1,200 prisoners they had, including John McCain. Those guys came home, great men.
They were ransomed home.
That's correct, with the promise of money.
On the basis of this letter right here and the Paris Accords, we'll pay you $4.75 billion if you'll give us back our prisoners. They gave us back half our prisoners and said, where's the money? And Watergate came crashing down on Richard Nixon the very week that the deal was to be consummated. And from then on out, it's been,
We got half of them back and never gave them any money, though.
Absolutely. They never got a penny, and they're still asking for it. When the President Triet was down with Junior last year in the White House for lunch, they asked for it in a full-page ad in the New York Times and in the Washington Post.
So
they
still want it. There's still 300 there.
600.
Hard to know. Hard to know, but the intelligence.
Where are they?
Look at that map. If they can pull that map up that we have put together, the Senate Select Committee sightings. There's about 900 sightings, and you see how they all kind of conglomerate around the same place. You got people, a doctor comes out of a refugee, and he says, I was a doctor, and I was treating American prisoners at that camp. And a guard escapes from Vietnam, says, I was a guard, and by the way, I guarded American prisoners at that camp.
Are they all being held captive?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, they are.
These are not... men smoking dope or chickens running in the yard with children and what? No, sir. These guys are in prison.
We have about 4 minutes, so we got to get all this
underground prison. Serious stuff.
So, and you have an issue with John McCain over this. Why?
That's right. Why?
Let's do the USAK. Can we put that up on the screen?
The
cover of the book is a photograph, U.S. satellite photo of an escape and evasion signal put by a pilot in a valley in Laos in 1988.
Now, satellite picked that up. The USA is dug out of a dry rice paddy. It's pretty clear. Those are 12-foot-tall letters, 37 feet across. Below it is what is undeniably, a U.S. escape and evasion code, secret, given only to pilots and air crewmen. It's called a walking K, and I had to write it down, man. 24 feet tall by 19 feet across.
This is a little bit like a crop circle deal.
Sir?
It's a little bit like a crop circle deal. Well, I mean,
But I understand. But the guy's name, they give the pilots these things, and they say, if you're shot down, you put this down, we'll come get you. Well, they put that down. and they put their names down and they put their authenticators down. And it just so happens that on that one, which is on the cover of the book, I'm not trying to sell books, but there it is.
Well, why not?
Well, thank you.
We'd like to sell a book, An Enormous Crime, the definitive account of American
Heroes. I'd like for the American people to know, and I'm not jumping on Johnny, but he says in his memoir right here that that USAK was put down by a satellite imagery, picked up a huge USAK cut in a Laotian rice field. It turned out to be a young Laotian boy's handiwork that he had copied off of an envelope, 37 feet long, 10-foot tall letters. He doesn't want to do this. John Kerry doesn't want to do it.
Why?
Junior Bush doesn't want to do it.
Why?
His father didn't want to do it.
Why?
None.
They don't want to admit the corruption of Washington. They've each covered up, and as David Boren said, they've passed it on from one group to another. Just let it go and the hell with it.
Amen. 4,287 reports that we on the committee looked at and picked out about 950 that we thought, and those are the ones that are on the map, and they said nothing to it.
Well, neither Senator Obama nor Senator McCain are going to, if either one of them is elected, well, one of them is going to be elected. So you can't look for any help from either one of them either,
these,
right?
These guys need.
At least Senator McCain, apparently.
No, these guys need a break. A break in the diplomatic something, China something, I don't know.
So aside from buying this book, which is a good idea, An Enormous Crime.
Well, thank you.
What else can people do?
People need, I don't know that what you said is true, that if one of these new men becomes president, why couldn't they say enough with what's happened in the past?
Well, they could.
Yeah, and go make a deal with Vietnam and buy these men back while they could still have a life in this country.
Bailing out the banks.
Yeah, I mean, it's less money than we're giving AIG for facials and pedicures.
Put the money on the plane. And
No, I agree. No, you make a compelling case. Thank you both very much, John.
God bless you for
Bill Hendon.
Oh,
you're more than welcome. Was the New York Times bestseller and hardcover is out in paperback now. An Enormous Crime.
I had the honor to interview Bill Hendon shortly after I missed it, or right in that same period of time. I think it was about 2008, I think, is when this book was published, An Enormous Crime. But anyway, what actually happened was when we struck a peace deal, Kissinger, with the North Vietnamese, they agreed to release the POWs upon payment of about a little over $4 billion. Well, we didn't come up with the money yet at the time, but they went ahead and they had around 1,200 prisoners, and they released half and then held back half for the payment of the $4 billion, which never happened. So Congress and our representatives and senators and presidential, you know what I mean, administration never got the money up and said, okay, to the Vietnamese, here's the money, we want everyone released. They abandoned those POWs over there. And that's what that interview was about and what that book is about. So here we have the late Senator John McCain and John Kerry abandoning our POWs. And I'm not happy about it. When I interviewed Bill Hendon, I brought on that second hour, I brought on one of the founders of Rolling Thunder, and he reaffirmed everything that about what happened in the abandonment of those POWs. So anyway, that's basically the way we're going to start off this show, is trying to bring a little bit of truth, you know what I mean, to this situation that's occurring. We have now this big tech, high tech controversy that's going on. And I picked up a couple of interviews on Tucker Carlson just recently. I think it was yesterday evening. And the interviews were very, very interesting, because one man had written, was the author of a book, Search and Destroy. The first clip here will be with Scott Cleveland. And followed by an additional clip, I'm just going to put these clips together, of Luther Lowe, okay? And he's a lobbyist for Yelp in Washington, D.C. And he's saying that what's happening, because of what Google and these other big social firms are doing, these high-tech firms are doing through their censorship with using algorithms and so forth, is that the public is reacting and Congress is reacting to a greater degree now because it's a form of censorship. And also, it's a form of propaganda and brainwashing and mind control. Because if you limit what people can see, you're going to be able to control them. So anyway, this is an interview that Tucker Carlson had recently with Scott Cleland, and Luther Lowe, L-O-W-E. Okay, listen to this and see what you think.
Google has an army of lobbyists in Washington. It bankrolls politicians in both parties. It contributes to virtually every major think tank in Washington, regardless of ideologies, including, hilariously, a think tank dedicated to fighting monopolies. At least one of those think tanks has fired a staffer for being critical of Google. So the question is, and it may be rhetorical, is Google too powerful to regulate? Scott Cleland is the author of Search and Destroy, Why You Can't Trust Google, Inc. He joins us now. So, Scott, very quickly on the search question, that seems like one of the most basic questions. All of our information comes through this tiny little portal. Google says, trust us, we're not putting our thumb on the scale, can we?
No, we can't, because it's blanket trust. It's blind trust, because no one does really know what goes on there. The problem is when you put all of access of supply and demand to access all the world's information through one black box. One thing that we have no transparency to, we don't understand. And let's not forget, the whole purpose of it is to rank. So it is right to choose what is best. They have said for years it's algorithmic. So if it's algorithmic, it must be okay. Well, an algorithm is just a computer program that people decided what the biases would be.
Right.
They're purposeful biases. But the problem of Google is the fact that we have concentrated all that power in one company, because it's the most harmful monopoly you can imagine. Information is power. Power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. In a constitutional republic, in a free market, the free flow of information and the competition of ideas are paramount and central. And when you go through one black box and say, that is all occurring only here, and there's one person that basically sets what the ideology and the approach is going to be, and it's Larry Page, and then that filters through, you have it's a very scary situation. You want a competition for ideas. You want a competition for sources. He has created an unbelievably innovative and great search engine. No criticism there in the sense of its capability. But how the government, and I've for 10 years been trying to prevent this monopoly, and the government screwed up over time and time again in allowing Google to become this monopoly.
That's for sure. So quickly, news reports have reported that Google is working to devise a search engine that would help the fascist government of China repress its own people. So given that we believe that they are willing to suppress information on behalf of a government to achieve repressive political ends, why should we trust them not to do that to us?
Well, we shouldn't. And my goodness, this is as Orwellian as it comes, because when that was brought up and when somebody who we know criticized Google for biasing its search, the President of the United States, they had their answer that says, we never make our search results based on a political ideology. Well, they are committing to do it for China, for the entire country, soup to nuts, for everything. They're going to bow down to the Chinese ideology.
Yeah, not a big deal. A country that executes political prisoners and sells their organs. Seems like just the kind of people you'd want, to help remain in power.
But how they can say that with straight face and then saying that they're not bending their will to ideology, they do it all around the world.
Well, they're lying. Scott, you have been fighting a lonely crusade on behalf of this idea, and we're obviously rooting for you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So European regulators fined Google billions after they accused the company of abusing its power and engaging in anti-competitive practices. American regulators, meanwhile, are nowhere to be found. Why is that exactly? Luther Lowe is the Senior Vice President of Public Policy for Yelp, and he joins us now. Luther, thanks for coming. And I'm always particularly happy to talk to you since you're right in the middle of this world. You work for a big tech company. It was a really simple question. Google has a monopoly. Nobody debates that. Monopolies are supposed to be banned by U.S. law. We have a whole Congress with 535 people in it designed to protect us from monopolies, but they're not. Why?
Well, I think there's political capture going on, and I think if you have a search engine that is clearly guilty of self-serving bias, and I'm not talking about the type of self-serving bias that President Trump tweeted about earlier this week. I'm talking about demonstrable, easy-to-prove bias in the most common area of what we do on Google, which is local search. This should be a slam dunk. We should be able to show consumer harm, and in fact, we have done so. You know, when a mom does a search for a pediatrician in Salt Lake City, she is basically trusting Google to match her with the best information from across the web. That has been the implicit promise to Google's users throughout its growth. But what's happened is that Google has swapped out that information and put their own inferior information there. And so this creates consumer harm, and it gets back to your question about monopoly. If you can show that consumer harm, then you can easily prosecute an antitrust case. And this is why I think we should focus on the business conduct of Google as it relates to search.
Well, I agree completely, but the monopoly is prima facie, and so is the harm. You work in Washington on this issue. Doubtless you've spoken to members of Congress, and you've told them what they already know. This is companies too powerful. It has a monopoly. It's hurting consumers. How do they respond?
I mean, I think we're starting to see the tide turn. And I was really heartened to see, for example, Senator Hatch's letter yesterday to the chairman of the Federal Trade Commission, where he basically said, listen, you know, we closed the last investigation in 2013. One expects that when you close an antitrust investigation, the market is going to be less calcified, that there are going to be, the company in question is going to be less entrenched, there's going to be more startups, and so forth. But we're seeing the opposite. And so maybe we should take another look at this. And so I think we're beginning to see the tide turn.
Good for Senator Hatch, but...
The bottom line on what they're saying, basically, and especially what Luther Lowe was saying, is there's going to be some future antitrust actions of some kind through the Federal Trade Commission. And... The conservatives out here, including myself, we abhor regulation and government control over anything. But when these organizations like Google and Facebook and these others have gotten so humongously large, then they're overriding what people are wanting to listen to. And people want to listen to the left and the right and everything in between. See, they want to listen to the Democrats. They want to listen to Republicans. But these big organizations, by limiting and using algorithms to customize what is being presented up, like there was a recent guy that said he put in there that black people are not monkeys, and that the search engine knocked him off because of the word monkey, because of this recent, you know, controversy in Florida. See, and so, you know, there's good black people out there and there's good white people out there, and we got to get over this division that's occurring in the country, see. But anyway, that's how these algorithms, they don't have any logic. They're not that sophisticated sometimes, and they'll just knock out stuff. If they see a word, they'll just knock out the whole thing or ban you from the network or so forth and so on. And so it goes on and on and on. Now we've got an interview here with Peter Schweitzer, and he is putting out a documentary, okay? Tucker Carlson interviewed him. The Creepy Line is a new documentary just coming out. Pete Schweitzer also wrote The Clinton Cash, okay? So he wrote a book on the way the Clintons have been piling up cash, and many contend that mishandling and way outside of the law, the Clinton Foundation. So listen to this, and this is Peter Schweitzer again, and this is where, again, this is big tech and what it's doing to the country. So listen carefully.
Welcome back to our special Tucker Carlson Tonight, Tech Tyranny. And tyranny is not an overstatement in this case. The man behind the book and the movie Clinton Cash that exposed the Clinton Foundation's pay-for-play relationship with various foreign governments is coming out with a new film, and the target is big tech. Here's a preview.
They can suppress certain types of results based on what they think you should be seeing, based on what your followers are presenting.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis, by suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Film comes out September 17th. Peter Schweizer, of course, is the man behind the project, and he joins us tonight. Peter, first, congratulations on this film. Remarkably prescient, and I'm sure it'll be as smart as your last project was. As you did it, you spent all this time looking into this subject. Tell us one of the salient things you learned. What blew your mind in researching this?
Well, what blew my mind is a couple of things, Tucker. First of all, the dominance that Google has in the marketplace. But second of all, Google is unlike pretty much almost any other company in the world. What do I mean by that? Sure, they're motivated by profit. They have shareholders. They have owners. But this is a company that at its core is utopian, or at least the founders have a utopian vision. They don't view themselves as another company. So when people say, oh, Google would never manipulate the algorithm, they would never engage in this kind of behavior because they don't want to hurt their market share, they don't think in those terms. They make decisions all the time that are based on their vision of what is good and right rather than what consumers want. And with the power they have combined with this sort of idealism, I think creates the problems that we have today with censorship and with manipulation.
So give us a sense. I mean, I think you just got right to the heart of it. They have a vision. Is their vision, would you say, in sync with the views of your average American? What is their vision?
Well, I think their vision, certainly is partly epitomized by Burning Man, sort of this festival that they go to. In fact, when they hired Eric Schmidt to be the CEO, 15 or so years ago, one of the reasons they picked him is because he went to Burning Man. And this is sort of secularist sort of religious gathering in the Nevada desert. There's a lot of things about traditional values they don't like. There are a lot of views about sort of conservative free market capitalism they don't like. And they have a vision that they want to be transformative. And that's fine, except they want to be transformative to, I think, an American public that isn't interested in being transformed by them. And the problem is, Tucker, that we don't know what they're doing. We don't know what we don't know. We know the end results. We know that there's provable evidence of manipulation. But we don't know how it's being done. That's what makes it, I think, so troubling and difficult to get underneath.
They're not an American company, obviously. They're a multinational company, despite the fact that Al Gore owns a lot of the stock. Do they see themselves as a company that has an obligation to America, American society, American culture, our economy, or no?
No, they don't. They don't. I think they view themselves as a transformative country. And look, when they read that statement to say that we don't manipulate the algorithm, for a political benefit, I mean, that rings hollow. You know, go back 5 to 10 years ago, they were charged with manipulating the algorithm for commercial purposes. Luther Lowe was talking about that on the show.
Exactly.
What was Google's position? It was the same absolute denial. The problem is the European Union, the Federal Trade Commission, scholars at Harvard and elsewhere have looked at this and says that Google is lying. So why should we believe them now? The evidence is overwhelming. They're engaging in political manipulation as well.
Of course they are, and our Congress does nothing. Peter Schweizer, again, the movie comes out September 17th, and you just know it's going to be worth watching. Thank you for that.
So Peter Schweizer say they've lied to us before, so why should we believe them now? These corporations, they get so big that there are people that work for the corporations, and they worship these corporations, and they'll do things for the corporation that maybe they wouldn't even do normally face-to-face with a customer or something like, oh, but the corporation, they'll bend over backwards and do things that they never would do otherwise. So anyway, that's big tech, that's high tech. It's the ascendancy. There are a couple of Collins brothers, years ago that I interviewed that had written The Ascendancy of the Scientific Dictatorship. And that's what's been going on. I mean, you go back to H.G. Wells and the British system. They had the poor laws, they had the corn laws, they had the six acts, They did all these other things to suppress people. At one time, in Britain, you couldn't get an industry of wool going. You couldn't make your own fabric or anything out of wool and stuff. So there's always these monopolies. But these monopolies, they're characteristic of they become criminal, see? They're criminal in nature is what we have. When we say monopolies, we have criminal activity here, see? And that's really what's going on here is that you go in and you look at the crime families, you look at the areas that they operated in, like Carlos Marcello down in Louisiana. He was the first guy that set up the turf, the rule that if you come into my area, you better phone and let me know you're coming into my area. We're going to take you out, see? And so that's how they all wanted a monopoly within their cities that they operated, and then the different crime families within those cities. They divided up the city so you could have all the gambling and the girls in this area, but we're going to take the girls and the gambling and whatever and the number of rackets in this area, see? So all of these things culminate eventually into a monopoly. Now, what's dangerous about this is in 2003 in England, I believe that's the correct date, there was an office of communication set up over there, okay? And what that did was previous to that Office of Communications, there was five different agencies that regulated media in the UK. Now, I bring up the UK because they are the masters of control and mind control and masters of manipulating and dominating these minds over at the UK. They got them under their thumb. But much of it is not only physical dominance through police force and all that, but it's psychological control. And so that's why it's interesting, and we need to bring this up because they're transporting those ideas into America via the Bilderberg meeting. I'll tell you how that's connected in. Okay, but what is happening is that there's scientific means now to control and manage people, and it's just growing by leaps and bounds, and it's getting worse and worse every day. See, and so. We've got to take note of the different techniques that the people are using to control us, and that's really what they're doing is that they're really controlling us on a very, very high level of mind control and of propaganda, of persuasion and influence. There's about 30 terms if you want to look it up, see, and look into it a little bit on a deeper basis. But that's what we're up against. And then the reason why I brought up this Office of Communications is that we need to know Sharon White is head of that now, okay? And she's a civil servant. This is called the Office of Communications now, and she's the director of it. Michelle White, excuse me. And operating out of London. Well, about 2 years ago, approximately, she comes over and meets with the Bilderberg meeting in Chantilly, Virginia. And lo and behold, who's there but Eric Schmidt and all these people. We got all of these people there that head up different things, the Facebook, and all these other people. So they can get ideas from this Sharon White, possibly. This is what possibly happened was that there was a meeting of the minds that they can discuss how to put laws out to control. Now, this is the danger that's being put forward, see. Just recently, Senator Warner has come out with some suggestions, and I've put some of these white papers up last week about how to regulate the Internet and things like that. Originally, it was not regulated, and that's what I'm in favor of, see. But also, it appears now with these companies getting so big and able to do the shadow banning and all these other very censorship type of techniques. Well, it's getting to be that they can have a lot of power to control, see, the way we think. When what's interesting, too, in addition to this, is that back in the 60s, after the JFK assassination, I believe it was the CIA that came up with an idea about these crazy conspiracy researchers, investigators of the JFK thing. So the idea that was put forward was that anyone that is into conspiracy theories or anything like that is a nut, is a conspiracy nut. See? And so what that was reiterated during the Obama administration by Cass Sunstein and another man that wrote a paper about how to go in. They were talking about the 9/11 truth movement. And the 9/11 truth movement says, hey, we don't believe the government, story on 9/11. So Cass Sunstein and them wrote a paper on how to go in and infiltrate, okay, the 9/11 truth movement and break it up. Oh, that's nice, isn't it? We've got our government here that we're paying taxes to, and they carry out this breaking our groups up of protest or these groups that are well-meaning. In many cases. And so that's something else, isn't it? Now, out of that, later on, you came here recently. There was a program in Great Britain, in UK. And is that one of the universities there? I don't remember the exact university. But anyway, it was a program of studying conspiracy theories, okay, and how they impacted democracies. And the idea is that conspiracy theories are a danger to democracies. That's sort of the idea that this program in United Kingdom at this great university, I won't say the name of it, they seem to put out this big program, you know, and it was titled Conspiracies Threaten Democracies. Well, let me tell you about conspiracies. What they do threaten, they threaten the people that control with money. Money, mind sorcery, and all that, they do threaten those systems because your people now are researching the way of their confinement, of their imprisonment, of their thought prisons, okay? And they're not dummy like we used to be. We're not as dumb as we used to be. And so what is coming up that I see and rising up out of this, some of these confrontations, is that they're ridiculing of the conspiracy. A friend of mine, instead of talking about conspiracy researchers, he calls them conspiracy scholars, see? Because with these people, what has happened is that these very, very draconian types of events that have occurred, whether you're talking about Randy Weaver or you're talking about Waco or you're talking about Oklahoma or you're talking about 9/11 or the earlier bombing in New York of the tower in 93, but whatever these events, people are going down into these events and they're researching these events. They're looking at the people that were involved in these. They're looking at their background and all their connections. And they're saying, hey, are some of these false flags or what? You know, to control us? And 9/11 was a gigantic trauma-based programming effort, in my opinion. And so that's beginning to be able to be used by the real elites, the world elites here, to control people, see? And so that's the way they operate. They operate with very grandiose ideas that are gigantic in scope. And then they can say, they always remind us, yeah, but look at all those people that died in 9/11, see? And as good as Hannity is, and I support Sean Hannity, you know, a great deal. He doesn't get 9/11 yet. Hannity doesn't. But, and he can easily be mesmerized by patriotic overtures. That's the problem with Hannity. And I love the hell out of it. You know, I like Sean Hannity. He's doing a fine job in exposing much of what's going on this Hillary, email scandal and other things. And that thing is just beginning to blow up right now itself. I mean, that email scandal, it's taking on proportions of gigantic, expose and corruption, levels of corruption that are unimaginable 6 months, 2 years ago, see? I mean, now they're pulling in all kinds of people talking to each other because they're exposing their emails. And we never thought that it would get that this far. Who thought it would be, would progress this far anyway, see? But it's progressing and it's blowing up their whole system. And they're coming back, though. They're, you know, like recently, there was anonymous news sources that CNN had, and they put out a story about President Trump having advanced knowledge of this meeting at Trump Tower with these Russians that were going to bring this dirt on on Hillary and all this. Well, all of that was just a lie, see? Okay? And I mean, it's just one gigantic lie and propaganda, you know what I mean, battle after another. And that's really, we've got psychological warfare here in this country. I mean, and it's reaching an intensity that I've really never seen before. Okay. Let me just hold it a sec. The size that we're talking about here of this gigantic machine that has, I would say that it has a money foundation. The control mechanism now is the financial, is the banking and financial aspects and the ownership of the central banks. But in addition to that, that there was a means by which, a concerted, intentional means by which to indoctrinate in schools, okay? To indoctrinate, heavily indoctrinate, and create a citizen soldier that was loyal and patriotic to the state. Now, the state was still controlled by the big money and the banking and financial interest. And so what they did was they went out here and they created the Prussian schools were a model for future school systems worldwide. And they created, they marched farm boys to the schools and made them mandatory at the end of a bayonet. And so in England, to study English history is all important because the English has had their thumb on their people. They're good people. The English people are great people. But the English hierarchy has had their thumb on the British people for centuries. And they've used, to a large extent, mind control and psychological conditioning and control methods, see. And so that's why when we look at some of the British institutions and the way they've set up their society and the way that they control their societies, we see America that overflowed from the Prussian school model, got into became the American school model, that the English banking system of control of central banks, the Bank of England, well, that got into here, and those interests in Europe and America own our central bank, which is the Federal Reserve System. So when you see some honest person like Ron Paul leading a campaign against End the Fed, he really means it, and he means well for America. You have these students out here that have been heavily indoctrinated into Marxist and communist ideology, okay? And they go down there and they, some of these that Occupy Wall Street had occurred a few years ago, it was aimed at Wall Street but not the Federal Reserve in Washington, D.C., see? So the money masters, and there's a guy that's written a book called The Money Masters. They've got their agents embedded in these far left organizations, okay? And they'll manage them up to a point, but they won't occupy the Fed. They'll occupy the Wall Street and put up with that and finally diffuse it through the winter, the harsh, cold winter where the people couldn't survive out there, see? But when it comes down to occupy the Fed, that won't occur in these radical leftist groups, see? Because those radical leftist groups are controlled to some extent through large foundations. Now, this Tides Foundation redistributes to other lower-level organizations who, in turn, get that money out to some very, very radical. And what it is that the ultimate money eventually woke up to the fact that they're going to allow and even nurture, and they're going to expand to some extent the liberal left, Marxist, communist left. Because what they're doing is that they're bringing them in to a statist, a very highly centralized statist system of government control through foundations and through the founding, I'd say, of ideas through school systems, foundation thinking, and all this other stuff. But also, they can control them through doling out benefits and programs, social programs. And that's how they intend to control the lower classes in the country. While they'll maintain their super control on the highest level, you could say the capstan of this great power pyramid through some kind of I would describe it as a corporate fascist, a financial fascism, you know what I mean, through the dominance and the monopoly of money creation, and they're going to continue on. Now, ask your average liberal out here about the Fed and how money is created, and they're not going to be able to tell you in most cases. You go out here and you ask the average conservative over here, and even some of your Christian people are beginning to catch on to this system of money creation out of thin air and so forth. And that's the way it works, is that they have the power to create credit. They don't coin or mint money, but they have the power to create money from out of thin air and place it on the set of their bank books in the form of credit. Now, that credit is exchanged between these banking institutions with what? Checks. Now it's instantaneous clearing of credits and debits. See what I mean? Electronically. See. So it's all electronic. It's all on a set of books. It's all created, see. But in the creation of that money, those credits and so forth, just not everybody can do that, see. And so because there's a limit on who can do that, then there's a monopoly that has arisen from that limitation of who can create credit, see, on a set of books. Now, that in collaboration with their mind war stuff about this great idea they came up with, like conspiracy threatens democracy. No. The conspiracy scholars, who, and that's the way I describe them, are the greatest threat to the big money powers in the world right at this point. That's why you see these social profile types of labeling over in China, see. And they're going to do experiments in China and see how they can give them a social profile, see what about, whether they're trustworthy or not. If they're not trustworthy, they can't take mass transit, or, you know, they will get the lowest jobs, or they might not even have jobs, and so forth. So we're headed towards China, a focus of China, and these people now, it appears that many of our elites and our, you could say, internationalists and globalists have been consorting with the upper Chi Coms, the Chinese communists, who have a base of power through the monopoly, the control of the military over there, and the social organs of propaganda, the press and the media in China. That's why they won't allow just anybody in there to work and operate, see. But they're out here stealing everything they can from the West. If you go back to Chinese history, you're not going to find any kind of historical record of creating copyrights and protecting their artists. They don't have that concept, see. And the West, the idea of property rights concerning intellectual property came out of Europe and the West, in America, when songwriting and publishing a book, the publishing industry. This is what gave rise to these kinds of rights, where you could gain some multiple wealth from it, see. So that's really what's going on. And the other thing to think about now is that we must come together. We must overlook these divisions that are purposely, intentionally been, you could say, embedded in our societies. And another thing before I conclude this program this evening was, we have there's been some things that have come out just recently, some announcements. I don't know if you've noticed it, okay? But some of these announcements, okay, are about are insinuating there might be another gas attack in Syria, okay? I'm seeing some of this stuff, and I caught it on a talk show host the other day. He made an announcement, so I started digging down into this. And Al Jafari, okay, terrorist organizations are preparing. Here's what he says. This is a report given to the UN by Al Jafari, okay? And he's the permanent representative to the UN. He's Syria's permanent representative to the UN, okay? And he gives this this report, okay? And his name is Dr. Bashar al-Jafari. And in his report just recently given to the UN this week, Okay. He stressed that terrorist organizations are preparing for the use of chemical weapons against civilians in Idlib to accuse the Syrian Arab Army and to justify any aggression that might be launched by the governments of the states which back these terrorist organizations. So what he's warning, this is a warning, and it's a very important warning. And it has, in conjunction with it, the white helmets. The white helmets have always been present at most of the gas attacks. In fact, this last one, they really, really, you could tell, that they were in there, putting it together, and they left that little town. I forget the name. But anyway, we uncovered that recently. So, what this announcement is that yes, he's warning, in a speech delivered during a session of the Security Council, this is Jafari, okay, on the situation in Syria. Al Jafari said, "I put in your hand documented information on the preparation taken by Jabhat al-Nusra terrorist organizations and the affiliated groups to use chemical weapons against civilians in Idlib province to accuse the Syrian Arab Army and to justify any aggression that might be launched on Syria." So, this is a heads up for us right now. It may not launch right now because of what's going on, in Congress and so forth and other, scandals. But let's be wary, very, very wary of an imminent gas attack somewhere in Syria in this Idlib province, see. Because what they've done before is they've set these things up. There was some information that came out that sort of insinuated that there might be another government attack using weapons, chemical weapons. So they'll always set up in advance some kind of a statement and then set the public up to look for the announcement when it occurs, see. But many of these gas attacks in Syria have been done by the rebels and then blamed on the Syrian government. And at one time, the Syrians lived in peace. There were Christians living next to Muslims and so forth, right next door to each other in these small villages. And they didn't go after each other or kill each other or anything else. Now, look at what's happened. And this recent announcement of the ethics, some kind of ethics, honors being given to President Obama up in Illinois, University of Illinois. Are you kidding me? This is so totally wrong. And just like they gave him when he was president, they gave him the Peace Award. And he had all these wars underway. Now, something has really gone wrong with society when it does stuff like that, see. And that's what we've got to be careful of, is that there's a psychology out there, and it can be changed and so forth. And here lately, in the last few years, I've seen a society grow sick, very sick, and irrational would be the term that I would use to describe it. And in this irrationality, there's madness behind it. There's hate and resentment, see. And this hate and resentment just begins to consume everybody. I heard recently that some of the college classrooms in the Austin area, they're just shouting very derogatory things about Trump inside these classrooms now. So Trump has a large following still. He's trying to thwart some of these things and problems that we have. He's bringing the economy back. There are more people being employed. But what we have to watch out from the left is this psychological attack that's continuing. And it's just like these Stormy Daniels and all these other things and Cohen, Michael Cohen and all. I mean, it just goes on and on. But when you start looking at the exposés that are taking place, they're only taking place through Hannity and Fox and things like that and these other conservatives. But the conservative talk show hosts have been shadow banned, and Alex Jones and others have been kicked off of some of those major media distribution organizations. And so they're limiting the exposure They, and this is what we're going to see on this midterm election. We're going to see how that impacts this midterm. So all of the conservatives that I've talked to are just saying the same thing, is that we've got to get the vote out, see. Now, what's so crazy about this society, look at what happened out in New Mexico with this compound that was raided. They found children that were undernourished, in filthy conditions. There's one child that died there that they buried there. There were five adult men, and there's a woman or two in there, that were in charge of this compound and lived there. And they were Muslim, connecting into these very radicals up in the Jersey, New York area. And then they go before a judge, and she releases them. And now, because the prosecutor didn't file charges within 10 days and convene a grand jury, then they released them. Now the FBI went out there and rearrested them, see. I mean, these things are just happening that are just outright crazy, you know. And it's all on a premise that we have to protect these rights of people and this and that. But this one was a slam dunk. Keep them in jail. There are too many problems with deaths on the property and so forth. The children were undernourished. They were abused by even state standards of New Mexico. And they should have never let those men out like they did. This was on some kind of $20,000 signature bond. Are you kidding? And they didn't have any money. I mean, that's creating big problems for our society. So anyway, we're thesecrettruth.com. We broadcast every Saturday night from the Austin, Texas area. We're at thesecrettruth.com, and you can go in there and get us and listen to us live on Texas Liberty Radio, or you can go into our site at any time at your convenience, thesecrettruth.com, and listen to this program at your convenience. We stand up for truth. It's not very easy to get to sometimes. It's very, very difficult. Today, with CNN out there and MSNBC and all those salacious types of media broadcasters, they're putting out just I've never seen propaganda, being put out right now by these types of organizations, as I've seen here lately in the last few years. And I've been around for a while. I've seen a lot of presidential campaigns and so forth. And I've never seen the country in this sad a shape or condition. Now, when you look at some of these extreme statements from the left or from the right and so forth, you sort of get the impression that society is totally gone. But if you look around, there's a lot of moderate to conservative people, and there's some very good people on the liberal left also that are beginning to wake up to how they're being abused psychologically and financially with interest and all this other stuff, see. And they're beginning to say, I've had enough. I've really had enough of this thing, and I want to do something different, and I'm going to go ahead. And maybe I might even vote for Trump because he did bring the economy back. And yeah, I don't agree with him on the wall and some other things. But otherwise, I just might vote for him because he is doing some of the things that he promised to do, see? And so we may see, a turnover of some of the formerly Democrats. And the black vote will be there for Trump. He's attracting and he's putting back to work more black Americans, African Americans than anyone so far. But anyway, we want to thank everyone out there for listening. We certainly bless each and every one of, and we care about each and every one of your lives. We know that there's a beautiful song in everyone's heart. But thank you so much for listening, and good night.